Housing Policy and Committee, excuse me, the Housing Policy and Finance Committee. Today being St. Patty's Day, 3/17/22, we're early today, 1:05. Thank you, members, for coming 5 minutes late instead of 10 minutes late. So today, we do have a full agenda. I just want to start off by thanking everybody for the last hearing and the great discussion. We will take up Senate File 3259 that we had testimony on the last committee hearing. We're just going to have discussion amongst members. Since we got input, we had a chance for members to ask questions of our testifiers. And we laid that on the table. So today we'll take it off of the table. So I guess I would like to move to take Senate File 3259 off the table. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. So we're going to have a discussion on that. I'm going to run up front, and Senator Dames is going to take over.
Well, thank you, Senator Drahab, and it's my understanding that you have the A6 amendment.
Yes, thank you, Chair Dames. Members, you should have an amendment in your packet. And maybe we can go to council to describe the amendment when they find it. And this is something to clarify that came up in the hearing, trying to improve the bill as it moves through the process, members. So if we could go to Mr. Stang.
Mr. Stang, would you please go through the amendment?
Mr. Chair, members, this A6 amendment is actually an amendment to the A4 delete all that we adopted Tuesday. And it responds to several concerns that were raised during the hearing. It deletes all of Article 2 and reinserts in Article 2 just because that was the easiest way to engross it for people to read it. But Section 1, you might recall that there was some question whether the changes with regard to the energy and building codes just affected residential or were broader than that. And this amendment attempts to make it clear that all Senator Drahab is getting after with this bill are residential energy codes and building codes. So that's what Section 1 does. It just, there's the payback requirement there that there has to be a 5-year payback for changes to the energy code. And we pulled it out, put it in a new subdivision, and that's what Section 1 is. Section 2 is not changed at all. In Section 3, two changes were made. There was a deletion to one subparagraph that required that a municipality shall not require PUD agreement conditions that exceed the requirements in the state building code. That turned out to be a little problematic, so that was taken out. Senator Dietzick raised a question about what amenities meant on in subdivision 3 of the A4 in the context of that provision, and that was pulled out as well. Those are the only two changes in that section. And then in Section 4, again, the residential building code issue, what this says, again, and limits it only to residential code, is that no changes can be adopted prior to January 1st, 2026, unless approved by law. So that's what this amendment does.
Senator Drahab, any further comments on the A6 amendment?
No.
Thank you, Senator Drahab. Members, any questions on the A6 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Senator Drahheim, if you would like to provide any more comments on Senate File 3259 as amended, please move forward.
You know, thank you, Chair. And you know, we heard a lot of great testimony. I think there was, 20 testifiers, a lot of information, a lot of good comments and questions after the hearing. And I'd just like to respond to a little of that, if I could, Chair. You know, we've had a lot of testimony about how things aren't working. And that's what we're trying to get at here. We have some great ideas coming up on some bills later today with some new ideas. I think there's a lot of new ideas in this. But what I know is what we've been doing hasn't worked. We've had decade after decade after decade of the same things. And the testimony we heard was it's not working for the people, especially in Minneapolis, St. Paul. We all know rent prices are higher. We all know home costs are higher. We heard testimony that we have the worst inventory. We have the highest cost. We had this nice little graph showing our state surrounded by other states and the higher cost of a home. The equity gap, something we've talked about, the difference in home ownership. As prices go up, that equity gap just gets worse. And we're going to hear another bill coming up quick that I think will help with that. A different idea, which is what we need. We talked about how for every $1,000 we add to the cost of a home, we eliminate 3,000 to 4,000 Minnesotans. And why do I use a range 3,000 to 4,000? Because it depends on the interest rates and what the cost of money is, and money is going up. So somewhere between 3,000 and 4,000 people are eliminated for every $1,000 we add on here in St. Paul to the price of a home. So if we're gonna try to get at that equity gap and try to help our kids and our grandkids to be able to afford a home, we need to do everything we can. I am a free market guy. I think this bill has a lot of free market solutions in it that do save thousands of dollars, which will enable thousands of Minnesotans to be able to afford a little nicer house. We can't buy our way out of this problem. You know, we throw around that 50,000 house or unit number quite a bit. If we were to have government pay for that, even on the low end of the spectrum, you know, you're talking billions and billions and billions of dollars. And as the finance chair will tell you, we can't fund that long term. We've done a great job in the last 6 years of making housing a priority, starting to change some uses from senior houses to single family houses for our HIBs. But our dollars are not going far enough. And part of the problem are things that we're trying to address in here. The building code changes. You know, why are you pushing this? This is such a minor piece. I have some articles here from the last time that we did building code changes. If I could, Chair, just read this real quick. It says, possible changes in state building code and energy codes could add $8,000 to $12,000 to a cost of a home. And we take that times $1,000 for every $1,000 we're eliminating 3,000 or 4,000 Minnesotans, it starts to add up quick. Here's a quote from a home builder and remodeler saying the possible changes for one of his houses, there's an example of, would be $7,307 and produce yearly energy savings of $167. Okay, at that rate, it would take 43 years to pay off those code changes. I think we all can agree we want a safe, energy efficient home, but we're chasing perfection here. And by doing that, we're eliminating a lot of people to be able to afford a home. So we have to balance that out. Yes, we want energy efficient homes. Who doesn't? As cold as it gets in Minnesota, of course we do. Energy costs money. We want to save money. Of course we can. But if we make the houses too expensive to build, people are going to be in, like what I spend a lot of years in, a 100-year-old farmhouse with single-pane windows, with literally newspaper for insulation. So I think the better we can do at this, we will enable more people to move into a newer home that is more energy efficient. And then the last piece on the energy code, here's a Department of Energy report on the last time we changed codes. It would have saved the homeowner $118 over 30 years. $118, that's it. But we've brought this up in the past on previous hearings. As far as some of the language in there, we are not trying to eliminate the tools for the cities. We are trying to put home ownership first, and we're trying to close that equity gap. PUDs can still be done. PUDs are a good tool for the city. We are trying to tweak the use of PUDs by some communities that are abusing the intent of what a PUD is. You know, I'll stand there, Chair. I appreciate everybody's time. I know there are some things in here that not everybody loves, but I think they go after what we need to go after, and that is the things that we can control on the cost of homes. We cannot control the labor market. We can't control lumber, but we can control what we do here in St. Paul. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Senator Draheim. And members, the testimony has all been taken at the last meeting, so we'll open it up for questions and comments by the members. So members, any questions or comments that anybody would like to make? One more time. Senator Dietzick.
I'm not on yet, so sorry. My computer shut down, so. I'll keep talking while I'm logging in again. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Draheim. I think some of this, I know you keep moving the bill, which I think is helpful to get it to a place where the cities and others are more comfortable with it. I still do have some questions that I'll continue to work with you on. You mentioned that we don't, you're not saying cities can't use PUDs, and so I think if you could clarify that a little more, I think that would be helpful, because there is concern on if you're limiting, on how you're limiting the cities, and so just clarifying that a little more. And then I think we all want to get more homes, and sorry, I'm trying to get on while we're doing this. We all want to get more people into home ownership, so I think that is helpful. But looking at ways, because I mean, this will provide some houses, and it'll provide more houses, but it doesn't guarantee affordability. And so I think we need to keep working at how do we get to more and more affordable, and how do we just get more and more people into those homes. But if you could like clarify the distinction on when they can use, just broadly when they can use PUDs still, as I try to get on my computer and I apologize.
Senator Draheim.
Thank you, Senator Deems and Senator Dietzick. The main intent of the PUD section is to eliminate the provision for aesthetic control. So right now, you cannot have zoning requirements that don't go along with the building code. So right now, some communities, not all, most of my communities in my district just want people to come and build. But there are some communities that have restrictions on what can be built. We have talked to these communities, we have talked to builders, we have talked to developers. And so they're saying, yes, we would love to work with you to come to our community, but you gotta build XYZ home. An XYZ home has to have a 3-car garage, it has to have 62% brick or stone front, kind of what I always refer to, the white picket fence neighborhood. And I think we would all love to have a neighborhood like that, but that does add to the costs. So when we are looking at having a section of town that has maybe a little more affordable homes, that affects it. So that's all we're saying is, if it isn't in building codes, you can't require it on a PUD. You can still do changes in lot sizes, tweak minor things here. It just can't be the look of the home or the garage size.
Senator Dietzick, follow up?
No, I think I'm okay for now, thank you.
Thank you. Members, any other members? Senator Port.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Dreheim, for keeping this conversation going, because I do think we have a shared interest in this committee in finding solutions that make housing more affordable, and I think that that's a credit to this committee. My concerns around this bill really are both tied to the energy code piece, but also does it actually get us to affordable housing? I think there are some solutions in here that I'm not against, that I think move us in the right direction. But you know, we heard testimony earlier this week that some cities tried doing the smaller lot sizes, and that what was built were just really expensive homes on those smaller lots, that they couldn't get developers to sort of build those starter homes. And thinking through what that looks like, you know, are starter homes newly built homes? Probably for most folks, probably not. They're no housing. They're not naturally occurring affordable housing that folks aren't moving out of right now because there's not something for them to move into. So, you know, I think we agree that we need to increase supply. You know, a big concern that I have with this is sort of as looking at it holistically, as we move some of these pieces that on their own might not be the solution, are we also moving, you know, preservation of our current homes? Are we also looking at investing in HIVs and moving to build more supply through the other resources that we have? And that is, you know, my biggest concern with this. And making sure, I think, like Senator Dietzick pointed out, being able to clarify that PUD section will be really, I think, really helpful in helping for cities to understand what tools they have to use and what that looks like. But I'm not convinced this is the whole of the solution that we need, and I hope that we are going to continue discussing, you know, the broader spectrum that we need to address for housing affordability.
Chair, if I could respond to that.
Senator Dreheim, response.
Okay, thank you. And Senator Port, thank you for the comments. First, the garage piece, I think we cut out of the last amendment last time, so I apologize for that. So the garages aren't included, so it would be just aesthetics, Senator Dietzick, to that. You know, I think we have spent more on HIBs in the 6 years I've been here than all the other years combined. So I think this body has put the emphasis on trying to solve the problem. Part of the problem with HIBs, last year was the first year we were using HIBs for single-family homes. So if we want people to reach that American dream, we need more houses out there. The part about the guarantee, obviously there's no guarantee, and you know, I've been in the real estate industry for 20 years, and when you build more supply, you move people up. So someone might be in that 100-year-old farmhouse that I talked about, or just 100-year-old house, and they might move to a post-World War II house, be the next step. And as their family grows, maybe they go to a house built in the late 70s and continue the progression like that. So by being able to build some smaller homes, we're not dictating how many or what percentage of the city. We're just saying we want cities to encourage, or we want to encourage cities to have one part of their city somewhere, which I think a lot of them are doing already, but not all, to put in some lots that are maybe a little smaller than the rest, where they can build homes that are on the lower end of the price spectrum. Now, is that going to be a first-time buyer? Probably not. But that will help feed the spectrum of homes as we climb that ladder. If we just build the mini mansions, the $600,000-$700,000 houses, it's really not going to help the middle and the bottom third of the market. So I do think that that is an important part. The energy code, to be frank, it's the most expensive part that we can control. We can't control land prices. We can't control lumber and labor like we talked about earlier. We can control or help control the supply and demand. And part of the supply issue is the land in cities and the zoning. So if we can have some of that land just squished a little bit farther or closer together, that will help. So thank you for your comments.
Thank you, Senator Draheim. Senator Port, follow up.
Yeah, just quickly, you know, I agree with that. This is, there's a step up process with housing. I think one of the concerns I have is that we are seeing in like large investor buyout of some of those houses that people are vacating. And if that continues and we don't have an answer to that, then those will often move to another rental house, which doesn't help increase home ownership, doesn't address our disparities gap. So just continuing to look at it holistically, I think, is really important. I'm excited for the other bills we're hearing today that I think get at some of those, increasing that down payment assistance and making sure that we are making that available is going to be really important. But on its own, you know, I'm just not all the way there on this bill yet.
Senator Draheim, response?
Yep, thank you, Senator Port. And I know these issues are complex, but the other bills we're going to hear today, including my own, won't matter if we don't have inventory. So we can have the best educational program in the nation, the best down payment assistance program in the nation. But if we don't have the inventory for them to buy, it doesn't mean anything. So I really look forward to the discussion on the bills coming forward. You know, I think the basis of our problem we're in right now is inventory. Inventory. Inventory goes up, it'll help on the price of everything and probably slow down those big corporations coming in and buying houses, because there'll be less margin in it. And they'll sell them and move on to a different community. So I truly believe that, and I think most people would agree, the supply and demand, put more supply in it, devalues it, and then they'll be out of the market. So, but thank you.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a lot of problems.
Just mute yourself there. Just speak through the mic.
I need direction. I keep thinking I
can I do it right.
Okay. I did that. Excuse me, I'm sorry. I just want to associate myself with the comments made by Senator Dietzick and Senator Port.
Senator Ress, could you speak into the microphone a little closer so we can hear?
Charlie. Mr. Chairman, is this better? Thank you. Just want to associate myself with the comments made by Senator Dietzick and Senator Port, but I do appreciate all the study and work that you've done in this. I think you already know I don't support the bill, but I do agree that having houses available is the number one problem. I do believe that. I know it's important to have really strong rental policies with regard to low-income folks and that are spread throughout our community, certainly in mine. I have developed a passion for making home ownership affordable. And so I really am looking forward to the other bills, I must say, as well. And I do hope that we can make some progress in that regard this session. But I thank you for all the work and all the courtesy that you show to members of the minority. Thank you.
Senator Draheim, response.
Thank you, Senator Rest. As always, we have open discussion in this committee, and I appreciate everybody's input.
Senator Rosen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Draheim. I'm still a newbie on this committee, and I would just like to thank, and I probably can thank, be the voice for everybody in this room, the amount of attention that you've brought to housing and your wealth of knowledge and your passion for it. And perhaps you may not agree with everything in Senate File 3259, but you are moving the needle. You're drawing attention to these very critical issues. And I keep talking about what you're saying, the path to independence is home ownership. How do you say that again? I'm gonna write that one down.
Yeah, we'll write it down. Pathway to home ownership is what we always talk about.
I
have a poster up on the door that says legalize home ownership. I truly believe that is the great equalizer. If we really want to help people long term, we have to get them on that pathway to home ownership. So I think these bills that we have coming up today will help that and will be an interesting discussion.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Draheim, thank you for your direction on this.
Members, other questions? Members, other questions? Seeing none, any final comments, Senator Draheim, on Senate File 3259?
Thank you, Chair. I think we've had a lot of great discussion. These provisions, for the most part, have been carried and discussed for the last, I think, 2 years. They've been modified. They've been adjusted. Trying to listen to stakeholders. I know these are tough issues, but if we don't take a tough stance and don't change what we've been doing for 40 years, we're just going to continue. So I urge support on the Senate File 3259.
Thank you, Senator Draheim. Senator Draheim renews his motion. The Senate File 3259 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Local Government Policy Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Senator Drawheim, your bill is passed and it's moved hereby referred. So.
Sorry, got to play a little bit of musical chairs here, get situated. Thanks for your patience. Sorry I was late. Thanks for covering down, Senator Ames. Our next bill before us is Senate File 3897. I believe, or Senator Drawheim, any amendments to your bill? Okay, very good.
Not yet.
Very good. Senator Drawheim moves that Senate File 3897 be re-referred without recommendation to the Civil Law and Data Practices Policy Committee. With that being said, to your bill.
Members, thank you, Chair Duckworth, and members. I asked Senator Dietzick to come up. She has a similar bill, and I thought we would just give her an opportunity to talk about that too. You know, a lot of different ideas floating around. I think our bills were very similar. It's kind of a new approach, and there's a few things that we'll need to tweak as we make the journey through the process here at the Capitol. But I just wanted to give her an opportunity to speak to her bill and make some general comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Okay, start.
Absolutely.
Okay,
you go right. I'm not going to tell you can't.
thank you. Yes, so my bill was Senate File 3608, and we originally had it on the agenda, but they are extremely, extremely similar. In some ways, mine is actually more restrictive. So, and so it works, and it was, mine came from that other body, and so I had questions on my own bill, and so I think it works to move forward with Senator Drawheim's Senate File 3897 because they both, the concept is to offer down payment assistance to first-generation home buyers. So for people whose family didn't own a home and their parents didn't own a home, giving them that opportunity, and especially for some of the people of color and lower-income families, medium-income families, they just don't have the family didn't have the opportunity to build wealth to pass it forward to help people purchase homes and to stabilize the families and build wealth. And so this is an opportunity and a chance to possibly help people get into homes and to close that worst in the nation disparities gap. So the bill basically, similar to Senator Drawheim, just lays out who is eligible. It has reporting requirements so that we, in the end, can look back and know how many loans went out, who they went out to, and where they went out to. And then also, again, what qualifications are needed to qualify. So very similar to his. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. And I also want to compliment you on your festive St. Patrick's Day attire today. I think Senators Rosen and Porter are right there with you. So well done. Way to show us up. That being said, we do have a few testifiers here. Unless Senator Drawheim, you have some more comments you'd like to add?
I do. I just wanted to give Senator Dietzick a chance to touch on her bill. The importance of home ownership, I think we're all in agreement on that. I think we all understand the opportunity to build wealth and what's been termed generational wealth. For those that don't know, my grandpa came here from Germany, so my parents were the first generation born here, and so I am the second generation. My folks owned a home, so I think that helped me understand what home ownership meant. That's part of the education piece that we'll be talking about later. We heard earlier a few weeks ago from the realtors and the report that they had about if you had bought a home 10 years ago, what wealth you would have accumulated. And I thought it was about $230,000 in appreciation in your home across the nation. That's the national average. And they can correct me if I'm wrong when they come up here. So what can we do to get those people that don't have that opportunity to buy a home? And this idea was worked on with the coalition of the Realtors, the Minnesota Homeowner Center, Habitat for Humanity, and other groups that came together, talked about what is the biggest obstacle in getting people on that path. And first generational home ownership, down payment assistance program, they thought was the best solution. And I was excited when I heard it until I saw the price tag. Because I know that we are constrained with budgets and targets that are given to us. But I said, we have to hear this bill. We have to talk about it. We have to balance that with the inventory that is out there. So even if I could twist the arms of leadership and the governor's office to fund this, does it make sense to fund this number when we don't have the inventory out there? I think, was it you, Senator Duckworth, that looked at how many houses were available in the, or was that you, that in the seven county area a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. and there was very few houses available in the metro area under this $300,000 or $300,000 price tag. So we'll hear about the program, and there's some unique things that Senator Dietzick mentioned. We're pulling this to the community development corporations to fund. And they're located all over the state in our local communities. They know the local communities a little better than the state agencies do. So that is a twist on this program compared to some other programs. I know a lot of cities have their own down payment assistance program, but for some reason we're not connecting the dots and getting it done. As usual, I could ramble on all day about housing, Chair Duckworth, but I believe we have four testifiers to come up. So if we could start on that list, that would be wonderful.
Absolutely, and you never do ramble, Mr. Chair, come on now. Although I do appreciate the brief history lesson, I never would have guessed your last name has roots from Germany, so. Mr. Iger. Or Mr. Egger, excuse me, you're up first. If you would come on down, please.
Thank you.
Whenever you're ready, go right ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Paul Egger. I'm Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today on Senate File 3897, and thank you to Senator Dreheim and Senator Dietzick for introducing this bill and for having the conversation here today. Senator Dreheim did a great job of articulating that this is something different. We're excited about it. You're going to hear from other coalition partners in a minute to get into more of the details on the bill, but I just want to give you a little bit of background on how we arrived at this proposal and at this point. I'm testifying today representing the Minnesota Realtors, but we are also part of a diverse coalition of groups that includes nonprofits, local units of government, and other business trade associations that has been working together on this issue over the past several months and for some even years. And the support continues to grow. I know there are a couple of new letters that are in your packet today from supporters that have arrived at that this is something that we need to pursue the discussion on. In the spring of 2020, Minnesota Realtors and the Minnesota Home Ownership Center partnered to launch the Minnesota Down Payment Assistance Research Project. And we had a couple of different goals for that project. One was to identify ways we can remove barriers facing home buyers with limited savings, and two, reducing Minnesota's racial home ownership gap, which Senator Dreheim speaks about frequently in this committee. That project led us to partner with a consulting firm, Rosen Consulting Group, in the fall of 2020 to produce a report titled Home Ownership in Minnesota, Quantifying the Need for Down Payment Assistance. That report was completed in early 2021 and provided to the members of this committee last March, almost exactly a year ago, by the Minnesota Home Ownership Center and Minnesota Realtors. That report includes a lot of useful data and information, but one of the key findings that reinforced the importance of focusing on down payment assistance was this statement. I'll just quote from it. Quote, although there are numerous roadblocks in the path to home ownership, especially for low and moderate income households and communities of color, the lack of capital for down payment is arguably the most significant financial barrier to home ownership. One common way to overcome this barrier is assistance from family and friends. However, most LMI households and first-generation home buyers do not have access to these sources of capital. This proposal does represent a new approach for delivering down payment assistance, which other testifiers you're about to hear from will describe in a little bit more detail shortly. And it's informed by the experience and expertise of people and organizations supporting this bill. We purposefully did not limit our discussions to how down payment assistance programs have generally been designed and delivered over the years. Instead, our discussions led us to recommend a new approach to better meet the needs of first-generation home buyers and reduce barriers to home ownership. The handout in your packet provides you an overview of the outcomes this legislation was drafted to accomplish. And on that point, Senator Dreheim alluded to the significant appropriation that is attached to the legislation, but we needed to include that to show you what an appropriation of that amount would accomplish in terms of reducing our home ownership gap in Minnesota. That fact sheet also on the second page includes an FAQ that explains some of the unique features of this proposed approach to delivering down payment assistance. Mr. Chair, thank you again for the opportunity to testify today in support of Senate File 3897. And now I'd like to turn it over to Julie Guggen with the Minnesota Home Ownership Center, who had planned to be here in person, but she had a conflict, so she should be on your Zoom. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Egger, and thank you for reminding me to let folks know there are letters in their packets regarding this bill if they choose to take a peek at them. Ms. Guggen, if you're on Zoom, feel free to unmute yourself, introduce yourself, and proceed.
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. Chair Dreheim and members of the committee, my name is Julie Guggen. I am president of the nonprofit Minnesota Home Ownership Center. I want to thank Senators Dreheim and Dietzig for introducing this bill and for the entire committee for their commitment to home ownership. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. The center believes that owning a home is the foundation for personal and community success. For over 25 years, we've worked to educate buyers on the complicated process of owning and sustaining a home. We've carried out this work by partnering with community-based organizations throughout the state to offer unbiased homebuyer advisory services. In our role as an intermediary, we also engage in other efforts to drive equitable access to homeownership, like this first-generation down payment assistance collaboration that Paul introduced. The members of our working group represent diverse perspectives and industries, but share a common goal: amplifying intentional solutions to break the cycle of racial inequities in homeownership. Too many Minnesotans have been shut out of the dream of homeownership through damaging intentional laws and industry practices. The development of intergenerational wealth was stifled by these practices, and the impacts are real for today's buyers. Capital for down payment assistance is a significant barrier for households of color pursuing homeownership. Traditional practices in down payment assistance have fallen short. Minnesota's Black homeownership rate peaked in 1950. Since then, the gap between white and Black households has more than doubled. just as laws and industry practices have been enacted to intentionally exclude BIPOC homeowners, so too must our approach to reversing these inequities be intentional. Senate File 3897 calls for a meaningful but realistic investment of $170 million to serve a minimum of 5,000 households over the next 3 years. We propose administration by community development financial institutions, tribal entities, and qualified nonprofits, all with demonstrated experience in reaching households underserved by traditional financial institutions. And we call for changes in how funds are accessed by qualified households. This bill provides funding for first-generation down payment assistance that is targeted, adequate to meet the need, and accessible to consumers. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Guggen. Next on my list, I see Mr. Jason Peterson. If you wouldn't mind unmuting yourself, introducing yourself, and you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you very much. I'm under NeighborWorks Home Partners. There you go. My name was frozen. So thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Jason Peterson. I'm the CEO of NeighborWorks Home Partners. We are a community-based nonprofit whose mission is to help families buy, fix, and keep their homes. I come to you today as a practitioner. NeighborWorks Home Partners provided over 400 down payment loans just this past year alone, primarily to low to moderate income and BIPOC community members. In addition, we worked with over 1,300 families on homeownership matters just in the last year. We've also recently worked with the City of Woodbury to launch and administer a first-generation down payment assistance program, which is one of just eight of the down payment programs that we provide. As a practitioner, I can unequivocally say that given the many pressures on affordable homeownership, any down payment resources would be extremely helpful. But I can also say that this program today is different. The creation of this program has been informed by decades of experience from practitioners to maximize impact, understanding, even in a surplus year, resources are limited, and this is a substantial ask. Here are a few ways in which this program stands apart from other programs out there. First, it's a larger amount of assistance. Most programs do not provide sufficient resources to help first-generation homebuyers with the upfront needs to purchase a home. Another major distinction for this program is there are no geographic restrictions. Virtually all down payment programs have geographic restrictions, which makes this very complicated for all parties involved, most importantly, the families. This program will be available all throughout Minnesota. Another important distinction for this program is the reservation of funds. This program will provide a pre-approval process, and this allows families to be more competitive when shopping for a home. They will have a pre-approval with them, and that's necessary in this hot housing market. Another major distinction, which we've already discussed, is this program will be administered by CDFIs and nonprofits. These are organizations who are embedded within the community and are already offering innovative financial tools and products. And last but not least, this program focuses on first-generation homebuyers. As Senator Draham has pointed out, most homebuyers are benefited with their first purchase through a gift from intergenerational wealth. Home ownership is one of the most important wealth generation vehicles and the single best way to break the impacts of generational poverty. And just to bring forward another stark statistic, homeowners in the United States have a median net worth of $255,000. Renters in the United States, their median net worth is $6,300. That's a 40 times difference. Just as important as the programmatic differences is the size of this investment. Homeownership for first-generation buyers is often out of reach, and this program makes a substantial investment to meet this need. While this investment will not be able to help all eligible buyers across the state, it is a huge first step. Having had the honor of working for an organization that has helped thousands of first-generation homeowners achieve their dream of homeownership over my 11-year tenure with NeighborWorks Home Partners, I am thrilled with the possibility that this program will provide so much critical support to so many fellow Minnesotans. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Next, we have Julia Nelmark, if you wouldn't mind unmuting yourself. And
I believe, Chair, that she's here just in case we need to phone a friend to answer a question.
Oh, okay.
But she's more than welcome to testify. But I.
Well, Julia, if you have anything you'd like to add, you go right ahead. Otherwise, I think we're good.
Great. I will extend my thanks to you, Chair, and the rest of the committee for hearing the bill today and giving us this opportunity to help our community so deeply. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Much appreciated. With that being said, members, I don't see anybody else on the list to testify. So if you have any questions for Senator Dreheim or Senator Dietzick, or if you want to start us off with some comments.
Thank you, Chair Duckworth. We have some letters in of support in our packets. The one here with that M in the corner, if you look at the industry that is behind this proposal, it is pretty much every major employer in the state is backing this provision. And I just bring that up to, I think people are getting our problem here in Minnesota of home ownership. And I think there's a lot of people stepping up, trying to help us solve the problem. But I just wanted to make sure everybody saw. It's a far-reaching list of groups and businesses that are supporting us in this bill. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do just have a couple questions. Senator Dreheim, it says on line 6 of page 2, an eligible homeowner must complete an approved homeowner home buyer education course prior to signing a purchase agreement. Number one, do we have an education course already in place? I know Senator Housley has her bill up next on a home ownership education piece, counseling training program appropriation. So is there one in place already that can accommodate this portion of the bill?
Senator Dreheim?
I think we don't want to leave out our testifiers online, but I think Julia would love to probably answer that if she's available.
Sounds good.
But I can if not.
Ms. Nelmark, did you catch the question?
I did, thank you. There is a substantial amount of homebuyer education available, and the Home Ownership Center helps to fund that for us. We, as a practitioner at Midwest Minnesota Community Development Corporation, offer that service throughout Minnesota. There is the in-person version. There are culturally specific programs for Native Americans and others. And there is an online program called Framework available as well. And these are available at no or little cost to the prospective home buyers.
Very good, thank you. And then, Ms. Guggen, did you have something to add as well?
Well, Julia did a great job. I rarely am in meetings where my first name is confused with somebody else, or is as close to somebody else. Yeah, my organization supports 40 agencies, nonprofit, community-based organizations around the state to offer homebuyer education and counseling. We work with close to 5,000 consumers every year. So thank you.
Thank you. Senator Rosen.
Well, thank you for that response, Mr. Chair and Senator Dreheim. I zeroed in on the fiscal note, the amount that you're asking, the $170 million. Did a little math. If I heard you correct, 5,000, it would service 5,000, which is about 34,000 per homeowner. And I see the bill says not to exceed 30,000 of eligible first-time generation home buyer with an administrative cost not to exceed 3,000. Is 5,000 homeowners, is that going to make a difference? I mean, is that going to move the needle? That's my question.
Well,
because $170 million is a large chunk of money. Is this going to move the needle? Thank you.
Thank you. So when we look at the state as a whole, we're the fifth worst in the homeownership gap, the racial homeownership gap. When we look at Minneapolis and St. Paul, we're the worst. If we would do the full amount, it would move us to 11th in the homeownership, yeah, across the nation, yes. There's always that issue of inventory. Do we have 5,000 homes across the state that would be under 300,000 to do this program? And the answer would be no, not right now. That's why the other bill that we had is so important, to get more inventory out there. So it would move the needle. I don't think more would work in the system, but it is scalable. And, you know, as we move forward with our budget in the coming months, we can look at what we have to work with and what we can do to help move the needle.
Mr. Eggert, to this point?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rosen, we were very intentional on that figure. We had a lot of discussions about whether we should, as a coalition, come forward with a much more, I guess what I would call it, a palatable number for the legislature to consider. And at the end of the day, and what led to this request coming forward, is we wanted to show you the outcome that we thought we could achieve and the number of dollars it would require to get there, to get us out of this top 10 of the disparity gap. So the number was intentional. We know it's large. We know that the legislature always has difficult decisions to make, whether times are good or whether times are bad, whether it's a budget year or not a budget year. But we wanted to show you the reasoning behind that number and what that number would result in. I think the other thing, just Mr. Chairman, to the inventory discussion, and I've been before this committee and others, it feels like a lot lately, concurring in the need for more inventory, and particularly more inventory at the more affordable price points. And we, you know, absolutely support Senator Dreheim's efforts and the efforts of the legislature to get us along that path. I would say the current market is certainly challenging, but just wanted to share some data with you that gives you a little bit of information about the status of kind of that sweet spot for the price point that this bill, that the home buyers in this bill that would be helped would be looking at. And in 2021, the price range with the most closed sales was actually the $200,000 to $300,000 range. So it's extremely difficult for buyers in that range to find a home. But if they're patient and they, you know, look at multiple homes and probably make multiple offers on those homes, they were still able to find a home in many cases. We also had 94,000 closed sales last year, and I'm sure the chair knows this. That's a record. So you've probably, in my testimony, heard me say that the current inventory shortage is holding the market back. It absolutely is. There's a lot more demand than there is supply, and that's a problem. But we're also seeing record home sales continuing in recent years, including last year. I think what that shows is that a lot of people were still able to buy homes, although it's certainly not the process that many of us have probably gone through, where you identify a home and you can go make one offer and it's accepted and you move in. It's challenging out there, as several members of this committee can tell you from experience. But I think the takeaway message is, you know, when you look at this proposal being a one-time, it's not a base request, and it's a three-year pilot program that over 3 years helping 5,000 home buyers statewide, we think is manageable, even given the severe undersupply of housing. So that's just one perspective on that issue.
Thank you, Mr. Egger. Anything further, Senator Rosen? Okay, Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, thank you, Senator Dreheim. I do, and the coalition that did this bill, I do appreciate it. As I mentioned, I had a similar bill, and I had the same questions on my similar bill. And so one of them, if you look at line 2.4, and we don't need an answer now, but to just continue the discussion and think about this. So line 2.4 talks about, so to qualify for that first-time home buyer, and first-generation home buyer, you have to have whose parent or prior legal guardian does not or did not own a home at the time of their death. Well, you have some people whose parents might not have died And or they might, my niece, I'll give an example, her parents sold their house and are living in an apartment right now. So under this bill, she might qualify, where she might not be the target market because her parents own a home, and they'll own a home again here shortly. They were just in this window renting, and so I don't know if we want that language tightened up or not. I also, if you go to the use of funds and talk about the forgivable loan, and so I want to thank Mr. Egger for sending me some info. I had asked before on a different bill on if this assistance was taxable or not, and in this case, in this bill, it appears that it is not, and so I think that is helpful as we are trying to get people money to get them in a home. It kind of like PPP loans. I don't know if it makes sense to send them money to help keep them afloat and then to tax it. And so I think that is helpful to know. And then one final thing to just consider on line 3.16, it talks about the number and amount of loans issued by the county. And maybe we don't need this, and some of the others on the coalition might have a better understanding. Would it be helpful to break that down to also include cities of the first class? So like in Rochester and Olmsted County, would it be helpful to know, did they all go to Rochester or did they not go to Rochester, or was it evenly split in Olmsted? And the same in Hennepin County, did they all in Minneapolis or are they all in the not Minneapolis? I don't know if that matters. It might be more for the data people that will then look at this if they find that helpful or not. But with that, I appreciate all the work that went into this, and I appreciate you hearing the bill, Mr. Chair. And I would, if we want to make any, you know, it's a lot of money, 5,000 people. I don't know if we can move 5,000 families because of the inventory, but I think we have to try if we want to close the gap. In this flyer that we got from Homeownership Center, Habitat, and Realtors, you know, it talks about in 1950, black home ownership was at 46% and white was at 66%. And the people of color in general were at 50%. And now black families are at 25%. And people of color families are at 43%, and whites are at 76%. And so I think we need to, I think it helps society if we can all help people build wealth and generational wealth. And so I think it is it's a good bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Dreheim, any comments related to that? Okay, Senator Port.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dreheim, I am really glad we're talking about this bill. I think it's a really, you know, it's got a big price tag, but it is targeted and very specific in its intent. And I think that that is a really helpful way to look at this very large problem of this homeowner disparity gap that we have in Minnesota. We need to address it. It's going to take targeted work to do that. So I really appreciate you bringing this bill. I think it's good for us to talk about. Mr. Eggers, we did just hear from you, you know, talking about record-setting home sales, and we know that housing is a unique partnership between the state and the free market. And so I'm wondering if you can talk, are there other policies or goals that the realtors have that are specific to addressing that homeowner disparity gap? And are there things we can do at the state to help in that, as we've heard, we might not have any money to spend in this area despite a $9 billion surplus? But are there other things that we can support what the realtors are doing to try to close this gap?
Mr. Egger, other than turning every human being on the planet into a homeowner, is there anything anything else the Realtors Association would like to do?
So, Mr. Chair, you're taking that option off the table for us? Mr. Chair, Senator Port, I think Senator Dreheim has brought forward a number of bills, and you've had a number of discussions in this committee about how to clear some of the barriers to home ownership. And we're talking about one barrier here, which is lack of capital for a down payment. I think, you know, from our perspective, we see this as being one side of probably a two-sided coin. The other is addressing the supply issue, and in particular, trying to figure out how you can leverage the efforts of the private sector to do what they do best, which is bring supply online. And where there are market failures, where the market isn't supplying homes at a certain, you know, area median income level, or for whatever reason that there is that failure, that's where government should look to provide a helping hand. But we haven't really unleashed the private sector yet. I think that's what Senator Raheim's last bill is really attempting to do. We think that's a good start. I think that's a healthy discussion. You know, we're happy to be part of that dialogue with all the other stakeholders that you're hearing about, both for that bill and against that bill, and other solutions like that that can get us kind of the all hands on deck cliche that we all keep using, I think, this session. But it really is. It's trying to figure out how we can match up the demand and the supply a little bit better so that prices aren't so out of reach for most Minnesotans who are just looking for an affordable home ownership opportunity. So it's the supply on one side of that coin, and we think this is a good companion to that, trying to target assistance at those who need it most.
Very good. Thanks. Senator Bork.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I think I appreciate that, Mr. Eggers. I think, you know, the concern I have is that with records, we sold more homes in Minnesota last year than ever before, record-setting sales, it didn't move the disparity gap. And so there's something that's not working in there. There's a piece missing. But even when we are selling record numbers of homes, we're not closing that shameful gap that we have here in Minnesota. So, you know, happy to continue working with you guys to find paths, both on the policy side, the investment side, and you know, in whatever way we can help you all to do that in the free market as well.
Anything further from members? Seeing none, I do want to ask Mr. Stang to elaborate on the reason why this bill is being re-referred without recommendation. So if you wouldn't mind touching on that, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members, I think the without recommendation part of the motion is because of the money in the bill, and I don't think this committee has been given an official target, or maybe Senator Rosen would like to weigh in on that. So we didn't want to jump the gun on a recommendation for that purpose. The other reason it's going to civil law is you'll notice Subdivision 7 has a creditor immunity provision. And briefly what that does is say a creditor can't be subject to liability to state or federal agencies for relying on a good faith attestation by a borrower that they're eligible. And anytime you grant anybody immunity around here, civil law has to take a look at it. So that's the purpose of the referral to that committee.
Very good. Thanks for elaborating on that. Senator Draham.
Thank you. I just want to thank everybody for the questions and the comments. Once again, I think we're all on the same page again. How we get there is another story. Another option would have been to put a blank appropriation on here. But like we heard, we thought it was important to have the discussion and the impact to make a difference. To Senator Rosen's question, you know, what happens if we do this? We get out of the top 10 in the country. You know, things move rapidly around here. You know, we'll continue moving the bill forward and wait and see where the dollars end up. So with that, I would like to wrap her up.
Very good. We can do that. Senator Draheim renews his motion to re-refer Senate File 3897 without recommendation to the Civil Law and Data Practices Policy Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Very good. The motion carries. Thank you. I'm going to turn it back over to you now, Senator Draheim. So give us a minute while we all get resituated.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth and Senator Deems for helping out there. Senator Housley, we have cut your time short. Sorry about that. You have plenty of time. I'm kidding. So we have next up, members, Senate File 1928. I would like to move Senate File 1928 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Housing Bill. Senator Housley, I believe you have an A17 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I think it's an A1.
A1? Okay, I thought maybe you had 17 versions.
No, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendment as it's an author's amendment.
Okay. I would like to move the A1 amendment. Can you explain your amendment real quickly?
Yes, Mr. Chair. It would, instead of the language that's in the bill, instead we changed it to just add $643,000 to the base, then that will increase the total dollars that HECAT will be getting to $1.5 million annually.
Thank you, Senator Housley. Members, we have the A1 in front of us. All in favor of the A1, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Senator Housley, to your bill as amended.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Like I said, this would appropriate $1.5 million to the HECAT program, the Homeownership Education, Counseling, and Training. HECAT funds supports affordable, sustainable homeownership throughout Minnesota. HECAT is the primary way the state supports education and advising for lower-income households and households of color to achieve homeownership. Access to independent education and advising like that supported by HECAT is one of the primary contributors to promoting homeownership in communities of color. Funding provided by the state through HECAT leverages over $1 million in private and federal dollars. Funding is granted to community-based agencies throughout a competitive process. These community-based agencies provide financial coaching, home buyer education classes, one-on-one advising, and foreclosure prevention services. Also, HECAT is instrumental in providing support to homeowners who face a mortgage crisis. Demand for these services has increased significantly and is likely to increase in the coming months and years from the fallout from COVID as it continues to evolve. I have two testifiers, Mr. Chair, Julie Guggen from the Minnesota Homeownership Center and Portia Jackson, a homeowner.
Thank you, Senator Housley. Do you have a preference on who goes first?
They both Julie? Can come up and we'll have Julie go.
Julie?
Or Julie might be online.
I think they're both online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're both online today. Okay. My apologies. I really wish pretend. I could be there in person.
Senator Housley's pretending you're live or in person.
Go ahead, Julie.
Chair Dreheim, Senator Housley, members of the committee, once again, I'm Julie Guggen. I'm the president of the Minnesota Home Ownership Center. Thank you for your time and for your attention to this bill. We believe, as I mentioned earlier, that owning a home is the foundation for personal success. For over 25 years, we've worked to educate potential buyers on the complicated process of qualifying for a mortgage, affording down payment and closing costs, and transitioning to sustainable homeownership. We've carried out this work by partnering with more than 40 community-based organizations throughout the state to offer unbiased homebuyer advisory services and our Homestretch homeownership education curriculum. Because homeownership is the main way that households in this country create wealth, we focus our work towards those that have traditionally been left out of the homeownership space, households of color and lower income households. Last year, 63% of the households we served represented communities of color, and the median income of those households was just over $43,000. Of the approximately 5,200 households we served, 3,700 were in the metro area and over 1,500 in greater Minnesota. Our programs are the gateway to homeownership success for families. Not only is the education and advising invaluable, but our services are required for many first-time buyer loans and down payment assistance, ensuring that participants have access to the most affordable, proven products. We know for a fact that Minnesota renters aspire to be homeowners. In a survey conducted in 2019, more than half of respondents indicated they plan to buy a home within the next 5 years. But the uneven impact of COVID, rising home values, stagnant wages prevalent in certain industries, and constrained inventory are creating unprecedented barriers to the achievement of this aspiration, especially for those we work with. And when coupled with historic racism and lingering systemic bias, we find ourselves living with one of the highest racial homeownership gaps in the country. The center is intent on reversing homeownership injustice and averting threats posed by homeownership challenges to individual households, our communities, and our collective economy. It's in this spirit that I'm here today to speak in support of Senate File 1928, as it would fund additional monies for homeownership assistance programs and allow this important work to be expanded and enhanced. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. Next up, we have Ms. Jackson, a homeowner.
Thank you very much. Sorry, I have my speech out here. All right. My name is Portia Jackson, and I'm a Black mother of five and first-generation homeowner in North Minneapolis. I'm here today to offer my personal testimony from that perspective. I am currently a community development specialist for Ramsey County, and I've been asked to add that Ramsey County supports Senate File 1928 and the goals behind this bill. Thank you, Senator Housley, for introducing this bill. 10 years ago, home ownership was not in my purview. I had a Section 8 voucher for 9 years and thought that that would be how my housing story would go forever. Until I went in for recertification and found out that my rent portion had increased to $1,200 as I had finished my bachelor's degree and my earnings increased greatly. I decided to voluntarily remove myself from the Section 8 program and rented a home in the open rental market. For a couple of years, I rented a nice home in South Minneapolis for a little over $1,500. One day, as I was writing my rent check for the month, I thought, I'm paying my landlord's mortgage. I should be paying my own. So I decided to research how I could buy a house. My goal was to purchase a home that was big enough for my large family, close to mass transit, and at a payment that was less than what I had paid in renting. I needed the guidance of someone that understood my goal and could break down what I needed to do to get there. I found the Minnesota Homeownership Center's website, which helped me find PRG, a housing advising agency in my neighborhood. I met with Aaron Wilson, who helped me develop a plan to improve my credit, save money for a down payment, and pointed me to a culturally specific financial literacy education program offered by Build Wealth Minnesota. I paid off things on my credit, saved money, and obtained an MHFA mortgage loan to purchase my home that I closed on July 31st, 2015. I could not have done this without the knowledge and expertise of my homeownership advisor, Aaron. Homeownership advisors bridge the gap for those who want to buy a home and do not know where to start. They not only walk you through the entire home buying process, they also take your individual situation into account and assist you in creating a plan to get you where you want to be. They're there every step of the way, all the way through closing and beyond. I found this work to be so important that I became a homeownership advisor in 2016 and still work in homeownership today, working to decrease the racial homeownership gap in Minnesota. I have been a homeowner for almost 7 years. Since purchasing, two of my children have graduated high school, started careers and businesses, and the younger ones have excelled in school and become immersed in our neighborhood. Homeownership has become the foundation for the future of our family, and my hope is that more families are able to make their homeownership dreams a reality. In order to do that, we will need a concentrated effort through education and advising, down payment assistance, and the building of entry-level homes. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Senator Housley, any comments or anything you'd like to add, or should we go to questions?
Oh, questions are great, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any member questions? I think you're good. You must have done a fantastic job, you and your testifiers.
Thank you. Or, Mr. Chair, people are tired and want to go home. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present this bill, and thank you for hearing it.
Okay, thank you. Very important topic. We are going to lay over Senate File 1928, so that is laid over. Next up, we have Senate File 37 Thursday. It's a grant program creation appropriation for manufactured home lending and the purchase of manufactured home parks by cooperatives. So I would like to move Senate File 3730 to be laid over. Senator Housley, to your bill.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. The bill before you today, Senate File 3730, will advance the work of this committee and those working across the state to permanently preserve manufactured housing by increasing the dedicated ongoing fund to the Manufactured Home Park Redevelopment Program from $1 million to $5 million annually. It'll also provide $25 million in one-time funding to spur innovation in manufactured home lending. And also it would provide $10 million in one-time funding to help residents purchase their communities. I have a community like this, well, a couple of them, in my district, and this is where the genesis of this bill came from. And thank you, Senator Dreheim, and staff for working with me and the communities on this. We need manufactured home community owners who are committed to preserving long-term affordability now more than ever. Last year, 2,800 units of manufactured housings were sold in Minnesota, and 81% of those were sold to out-of-state buyers. Across the state, we are seeing a new class of investor owners raising rents and instituting new fees and policies that are displacing low-income households across the state. So this bill would provide the tools to further the permanent preservation of manufactured home communities and help safeguard housing affordability for 180,000 Minnesotans that call these communities their home. Mr. Chair, I have two testifiers. First, we have Victoria Clark, the Executive Director of North Country Loop.
Ms. Clark.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 3730. And thank you, Senator Housley, for championing manufactured housing preservation. My name is Victoria Clark, Executive Director at North Country Cooperative Foundation, or NCF. I've testified before this committee a number of times regarding NCF's work to permanently preserve the affordability of manufactured home communities through the cooperative, resident-owned business model. I want to thank this committee for recognizing the critical role that manufactured housing plays in providing affordable home ownership opportunity to low-income Minnesotans and for the steps that you've taken to ensure that manufactured home communities are preserved. In previous testimony, I have outlined the primary challenges facing residents of manufactured home communities, issues related to the high cost of replacing private infrastructure systems, the barriers that homeowners face in finding competitive financing to purchase new and rehab existing homes, and the challenges residents face in competing for a chance to purchase their communities in an increasingly competitive and speculative marketplace. This bill addresses these systemic challenges and creates long-term systemic solutions. Senate File 3730 will increase the dedicated ongoing funding to the Manufactured Home Park Redevelopment Program from $1 million to $5 million annually. The redevelopment program has been significantly oversubscribed in both of its first 2 years of funding. In 2021, a little over $2 million in state appropriations was available through the program. Minnesota Housing received 14 proposals totaling $9.5 million. An ongoing, dedicated fiscal commitment to the redevelopment program is critical to ensuring that community owners, both private and nonprofit owners alike, can upgrade critical, capital-intensive infrastructure systems. This bill would also provide $25 million in one-time funding for manufactured home financing programs. This one-time funding would be awarded in a competitive process to nonprofit, mission-driven lenders to create and fund manufactured home loan programs, down payment assistance, and home rehab financing programs. I would note that this structure is similar to the one outlined in Senate File 3897, tapping into the statewide network of nonprofit lenders that are already established across the state. This funding would spur innovation in manufactured home lending and allow mission-driven lenders to pilot financing programs in communities where homeowners have long-term security of the land underneath their homes in cooperatively, nonprofit, and municipally owned communities. Long-term security of the land underneath the home is critical to being able to provide the type of competitive, longer-term, lower-interest home loan options that manufactured homeowners currently do not have access to. $25 million would provide loan capital to finance an estimated 150 new manufactured homes, provide down payment assistance to an estimated 250 households, and provide assistance to 300 households to complete critical rehab of their existing homes. The money appropriated by this bill would have a generational impact, as funds dispersed as loans will be repaid and recycled to future borrowers. Recipients of this one-time funding will also be able to leverage the state-appropriated dollars to raise additional capital from non-governmental sources, which will multiply and magnify the impact of the state-appropriated funding. Our organization has already assembled a network of nonprofit lenders that are ready to apply for these funds and eager to develop financing tools for manufactured homeowners. In the co-ops that we support alone, there are over 100 vacant lots that are ready for new homes and over 300 existing homeowners that would benefit from the home rehab financing. This is all to say that this funding will be put to use immediately, creating new affordable homeownership opportunities and preserving existing homes for low-income households across the state. The financing programs created by this funding will also provide a model for future statewide financing programs and have long-term positive effects for all manufactured homeowners across the state. This bill would also provide $10 million in one-time funding to help residents compete in the private marketplace and purchase their communities as cooperatives. This funding would be administered by Minnesota Housing and deployed to assist manufactured home park residents in purchasing their communities, including the upfront funds residents need to secure a purchase agreement of their community. In a marketplace where the deck is stacked against everyday working people, residents of manufactured home communities need every tool they can get to help them compete and, with any luck, win a more secure housing future for themselves and their neighbors. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify on this important bill. I welcome any questions.
Thank you. Next up, I think via Zoom, we have Ms. Seafeld with Park Plaza Cooperative.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm here to speak about Senate File 3730 and testify my story. My name is Natividad Seafeld. I live in Park Plaza Cooperative in Fridley, Minnesota. We are a resident-owned community, and I serve as the current president of the board and have for the past 10 years. When Park Plaza became a resident-owned cooperative on February 5th, 2011, our infrastructure was failing. In 10 years since, we residents have replaced Park Plaza roads, upgraded our water and sewer systems, added fire hydrants for the very first time, we did not have any, added more lighting, built a new storm shelter community center, and added a playground. These upgrades would not have been possible without funding from the state infrastructure grants. Unfortunately, many manufactured home residents across the state still live in communities with inadequate infrastructure. Their roads, water, and sewer systems are in worse condition than Park Plaza's were a decade ago. I ask that you fund the infrastructure grants in this bill to ensure that manufactured home community residents throughout the state have usable roads and access to working water and sewer lines. There is also money in this bill for new manufactured home financing, down payment assistance, and rehab loans. This money would help manufactured home communities address another pressing issue, filling vacant lots, of which we currently have 5 and are going on number 6 today. Last year, Park Plaza missed out on over $40,000 in lot rent income due to vacant lots. We have vacancies even though we get inquiries all the time from people who want to move in. So why can't we fill these vacant lots, we ask? The reason is that used homes are scarce and people can't afford new manufactured homes because of high interest rates and the lack of down payment assistance. That means new manufactured homes are too expensive to finance, even though they are less than half the price of a stick-built home. Money for manufactured home financing would help residents' own communities fill vacancies. This would simultaneously help us keep our lot rents affordable and allow more families to live in an affordable community. I thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for allowing me to testify today. My story is large, and we hope that others will have the same. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And next up, we have Mr. Bruner. Do you want to say a few words? Are you for moral support? Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark Bruner. I'm president of the Manufactured Modular Home Association of Minnesota. I'd like to thank Senator Housley for bringing the bill and her concern about continuing to grow the infrastructure grant programs administered now by the Housing Finance Agency. MMHA speaks for the nearly 1,000 privately owned manufactured home communities in the state of Minnesota, which have about 50,000 home sites. We also represent builders of modular homes, manufactured homes, as well as the lenders and the sales centers. We support the bill's provision expanding the current manufactured home infrastructure grant program, which allows both privately owned and cooperatively owned communities to qualify for assistance from the Housing Finance Agency. The provision in the bill establishing a $25 million pilot program allowing Minnesota Housing to issue grants to nonprofits to fund home financing, down payment assistance should have its parameters expanded to include the 1,000 privately owned manufactured home communities and allow the nonprofit lenders that receive those funds to essentially offer down payment assistance to the residents who live in privately owned communities, not solely just cooperative communities. Under the existing down payment assistance program administered by Housing Finance for site-built homes, it also applies to manufactured homes that are on private property, which is about 80-some percent of new manufactured homes that are sold each year. And the balance, the 20% go into manufactured home communities on leased land. The one final point I'd like to make relative to the importance of expanding the program to allow private communities to also participate. Within the past 3 weeks, I've had inquiries from two of our members. One is interested in greater Minnesota in developing a new manufactured home community. The other is in progress right now with their city to do an expansion of 200 home sites, which would bring their property to about 500 homes. And you know, their interest was in infrastructure grants, what's available, and certainly the ability for those new developments and those residents to tap into down payment assistance from this program would be very helpful as they crunch their numbers and look at and moving that those developments forward. So our hope is, as you know, discussions continue and the bill moves forward, to find a way to include the residents of privately owned communities to qualify as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any questions for any of our testifiers or Senator Housley? Thank you to everyone that testified on that bill. Senator Housley, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members again, thank you for hearing this bill. Some of the examples that Ms. Seafeld was talking about that, and the improvements that she has made in their community, both of my communities that have come to me are in desperate need of some infrastructure updating. And for those residents, this is their home, this is their community. And so I love this bill, and I want to thank you for hearing it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Housley. Senate File 3730 is laid over. I have no other agenda items, members. I believe we're going to have a hearing on Tuesday on... What? Joel has no idea. So it should be fun. No, I'm kidding. So we will have a busy week next week as deadlines loom, and we do have other bills we want to get in. So I appreciate everybody's patience, and we are adjourned.